Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
This is one of Colleen's songs, in case you can't figure that out. It's called Boom Clap. As soon as you're born to lose me. Anyway, speaking of Boom Clap, this must be love. It's got a beat, right? If this was on American Bandstand and I was doing Raider Record, you could dance to it. Anyway, joining me is Alex Hollings from the great state of Georgia. Hollings, what's up? How are you?
What's going on, man? Glad to be here.
Nothing. Just waiting for you to talk about gear and foreign affairs and all the things that you do, man.
I tell you what, as always, I've got an interesting story for you right off the bat. I was working on a gear review yesterday morning,
yeah,
taking care of my daughter.
Sure.
And I made the terrible mistake. You know, normally my wife is almost always here taking care of the kiddo while I work, but yesterday she had some stuff she had to take care of. And I foolishly thought that I could pull double duty and took my kiddo outside to play in the sprinkler while I was trying to mess around with this survival card tool that I was reviewing. And
yeah.
Trying to make the arrowhead, trying to wedge it into a stick that I had fashioned to create like a little spear out of it for the sake of the review.
Okay, hold on. So you were using the card and making the spear while watching your daughter outside.
Which you can already tell is just, I mean, this is the beginning of a stupid, stupid decision, right?
We're already beyond stupid. But let me ask you this. So when you say outside, you no longer live in rural Georgia. You live in suburbia, Georgia.
What was the name of that movie that had Nicole Kidman in it years ago? The Stepford Wives. I live in the Stepford Wives community, 100%.
Okay,
so they already think I'm insane.
So there was a fence, right? Or were you in the front yard?
No, I was in the backyard. In the backyard. Right. So, you know, you couldn't see us too well, you know?
So
my daughter's playing in the sprinkler, and, you know, I'm just kind of putzing around between taking pictures of the, you know, it's a survival card. What it is it's got multiple tools and one small card that you're supposed to feasibly be able to use in a jam. They're not supposed to be, you know, your primary tools. They're supposed to be backups, right? And so one of them is like a fishing spear that you can create. And I was like, oh, you know, I'll give this a try, see how it works. So I'm pressing down on this piece of wood into the base of that fishing spear, and my daughter made a noise that caught my attention, so I looked over at her. And this is the real tip that I've got for everybody. Never split your attention between a toddler and a tool, because they both require much more attention than the other will allow you to allot. And so in that split second that I looked over at my kiddo, the arrowhead just kind of tucked. Under the pressure that I was putting on it, and just went straight into my index finger. And I filleted my finger like a fish, man. It was like a Quentin Tarantino movie. But I have to say,
So what part of your finger did it go into?
My right index finger. It went in on the palm hand side, you know, on the underside of my finger.
Right.
Just like maybe a half an inch from the tip, and then hit the bone, slid off the bone that went through.
That hurts.
And then cut straight down in a line about an inch and a quarter long.
So now you and your daughter are going to the hospital.
Yep. You know, and of course my wife isn't there. And where she was, she didn't have cell phone service, because I tried to call her to be like, hey, I need some backup, you know. I'm super fortunate that my mom is still living at my brother's house about 40 minutes away. So I gave my mom a call, and in true mom fashion, she could tell right by the sound of my voice that I was like, Mom, I need you to get here as quick as you can. You know, I need some help with Reagan, and I need to go get some stitches. And my mom handled it great. My house looked like a war zone, because I was really bleeding, man. So, you know, I took my daughter up. You know, the first thing I did was snatch my daughter up and go, hey, Bean, you know, we got to go upstairs someplace safe while Daddy takes care of this. The poor kid, I soaked her in blood on the way up into the house. Tore open my IFAC that I had, you know, with my teeth, because of course it's my dominant hand. My kitchen looks like we were treating, you know, like it was a combat zone. We were treating gunshot wounds.
Now, did she appear to be traumatized by it? Because she's a little kid. She doesn't know. She hasn't really watched a whole lot of Quentin Tarantino yet, so she doesn't really know.
I was trying my best to stay very cognizant of how I spoke to her, right? I know I'm going to be okay. It's a finger wound. You know, I am bleeding quite a bit. But I'm not going to die from this. I'm going to get the bleeding stopped. I mean, I could cut the finger off if I had to, right?
Yeah, yeah,
it's like, I'm not going to die. You know, I'm cool. You know, sure, it hurts, but, you know, no big deal. So I was doing my best to, you know, talk to her just like I'm talking to you. Like, hey, Bean, because that's what I call her. She's my Bean.
Right.
You know, we got to go upstairs because Daddy got a boo-boo. I just got to wash this off just like you wash boo-boos off. To be honest, I wasn't entirely sure how bad it was until I unwrapped my t-shirt that I had wrapped around it, and it just started splurting all over the place. And when I went to try to irrigate it with my little saline irrigator, my finger just opened up like a filleted chicken, and I realized this might be beyond my my first aid means. So I tried to steri-strip my finger back together. That didn't work. Just too much blood. Everything was just soaking off of it. So
steri-strip.
You know, so I just wrapped my hand in gauze, and of course, because I am an absolute idiot, I had taken my daughter's car seat out of our second car and was washing it. So I had to go pull the pads out of the dryer one-handed, get the car seat put back together, stick it back in the car, and then drive to the emergency room. And the entire time, my daughter was calm, collected, well-behaved. She was so good. I don't even care about the stitches, man. I'm so over the moon proud of my daughter for handling a tough situation.
But she doesn't know. So really, she can't evaluate that.
I don't know, though, because
no, I'll tell you what you need to do. You need to do an experiment. You need to show her a few Quentin Tarantino films over the course of the 4th of July, and then you need to do it again. You need to shove it, that thing, that arrow, into another finger next week.
Just to see.
Just to see. So we'll have the before. After she sees a whole bunch of Quentin Tarantino and a little Texas Chainsaw Massacre, if she does the same behavior, she's a baller.
Then we know she's good. But her
Delta,
her calm
Delta Force,
and well-behaved demeanor was so out of character for her under the circumstances. You know, she's normally, you know, she's a firecracker, man. You know, you can't tell her what to do. And instead, she, you know, even at the emergency room, because she was there at the ER with me for probably an hour before my mom came to pick her up, she just sat there with me, you know, hanging out, singing Old MacDonald, you know, while the doctors were trying to irrigate my finger and doing whatever. I got patched up by a former Navy corpsman and a former Air Force C-130 pilot, where the emergency room team.
The corpsman is all right. The C-130 pilot, not so much. Like, what's she doing
well,
there?
She retired as a C-130 pilot and went back to school and became a physician's assistant. So she was excellent. So,
that's cool.
I was really fortunate. So honestly, man, you know, I ended up with 10 stitches in my finger, which would normally be a terrible day, especially for a writer. But things went as well as they possibly could for a bad day, you know, especially my daughter being so awesome. I can't complain one bit. I mean, I'll bitch about my finger aching while I type, but honestly, man, I'm so over the moon proud of my daughter that, like, I don't even care, you know?
I think it's an inconclusive evaluation.
Well, I think that you can say that because she's not your kid, but she's my kid, so I'm going to say that she's the coolest kid in the world.
No, you can't, all right? But we're going to come and cut the head of a chicken off in your backyard, and then you know how chickens run around after you do that?
Yeah.
Right? And then we'll reevaluate.
Well, I will say right from the start, because back, you know, my kiddo was born when we still lived way out in the woods, and I had an ongoing firefight, not a firefight because I can't fire back, but I had an ongoing war going with the possum and the coyote population where I used to live. So my daughter's no stranger to gunfire or dead animals, you know, now it turns out she's also no stranger to seeing the meat inside her dad's hand. And she even helped me change her clothes because she was soaked in blood and I didn't want to go driving around with a toddler.
Look how pretty the red is.
Oh, yeah, right? Daddy, she was awesome, man. I tell you, I'm still so proud of her. Between that and just like, she's been picking up all these new words this week. I'm just a super proud dad this week.
Like what words?
Well, the other day she said backhoe when we were going by a construction site.
Backhoe?
I don't even know where she learned that word. Also, the color purple and the color yellow, even though she hasn't really locked on simpler ones like red or blue yet. So she's OFP, man, but she's killing it. I mean, she's 18 months old.
Wait, what is OFP?
She's on her own fucking program. for those who may not be familiar with the acronym. You know, I try to get her to learn. I'm always trying to teach her these simple words, and she doesn't care what I try to teach her. But then she comes back to me with complex words that I'm like giraffe. That I'm like, who the hell taught you giraffe?
Hey, I was watching a video of my daughter calling, our youngest daughter calling is 15. And I was looking for a video that my son took in 2010, so 9 years ago, when I was in Afghanistan. He bought a JVC little handheld camera that shot in high definition. And then they would send me movies. So they did it. They bought it to take movies and then send them to me.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so Patrick was probably, 9 years ago? Patrick was probably 20 years old. He's in college. It was his job to go pick up Colleen from, I think, first grade. So he takes a camera and he films as they walk home from school, which might be about a 5 minute walk. Okay? And he's having this conversation with Colleen. Now, Colleen had three older brothers and sisters, right? Two older brothers and an older sister, as well as, you know, her mom and I. So, I mean, she was around grown-ups. So, you know, unlike the first child you have that, you know, is kind of hoity-doat, number two gets the first child and the parents and progresses, I think, a lot quicker than number one. So, anyway, by the time you have number four, man.
I'm still doing it, man. I'm number two. I'm still kicking ass.
She could have bought and sold the other three at the same age with no problem at all. And it's really funny to listen to her. So, I mean, because she's like six going on, you know, 24. Anyway, so as I'm looking for that video, I run across another one. And she had just learned the word obviously. The video might be 2.5 minutes long. She gets obviously, right, into that 2.5 minute video at least a dozen times. It's hilarious. Well, Catherine, obviously something went wrong, and I was looking at Patrick, and I told him that obviously he needed to do something about it. And it's just really funny.
I'm telling you, it's the best, man. I took my kid to the park the other day, and I'm walking around like a dummy eating Cheez-Its because I brought them for her, and I was eating them instead. And, you know, she's sitting on the play place, and she kept punching her elbow and, like, mumbling through her binky and punching her elbow. And I was like, what the heck are you doing? And my wife finally came over and said, she's signing cracker to you in ASL, like that sign language. I've been trying to teach her sign language. And I was like, she's talking to me in another language? Like, I don't know these words. So my daughter is looking at me like I'm an idiot because she keeps signing cracker because she's asking me for a cracker. And I'm just munching away at the Cheetos like, huh, that's weird. I wonder what she's up to. So I'm like, my daughter's already smarter than me is what it comes down to.
It only gets worse. What if she tells you that?
God, yeah.
All right, now, what do you,
from her mom.
Let's talk about a gear. Let's talk about an item of equipment that you've seen that people might be able to use for the 4th of July. You see a lot of gear now as a gear guy.
I've got one for you here. And this one's, you know, on theme here talking about parenting. I just recently did a review. It's up on the Loadout Room right now, loadoutroom.com, for something called the High Speed Daddy Tactical Diaper Bag. And I have never been a fan of tactical dad stuff. It just seems like such a novelty to me. You know, we've all got tactical gear that we're going to wear to the range or take to the field with us, you know, if we want to go out camping and whatnot. But, like, I've never had any problem with my Wonder Woman diaper bag that my wife was gifted at her baby shower. I don't feel any shame whatsoever in walking around with a Wonder Woman diaper bag slung on my shoulder. It's for my daughter, you know. But, you know, High Speed Daddy sent me this diaper bag And despite myself, I really do like it.
Come on, man. It's like, I see that stuff. It's like, dude, dial it back. We got the
memo. Agree, man.
We got the memo. You're a tactical dude, okay?
You know, it's just like every time I see a soldier and his ACUs at the mall, I'm like, yeah! Oh, thank God, we're safe. You know, I can't help but laugh at guys when I see them with tactical daddy gear. But I got.
And now you're that guy? I never thought this would happen.
I would recommend, if you're going to buy one of these bags, you get the black one instead of the multi-cam or the olive drab or one of those colors. But it looks like, for the most part, just a regular old Blackhawk bag. And to be honest with you, it kind of is a regular old utility bag, and that's what I really like about it, is that they didn't add a bunch of doodads for parenting. You know, they only added a couple really specific changes that I'm a huge fan of. In particular, the front pockets are actually designed so that the top front pocket is a baby wipe holder. You can put a full-size pack of baby wipes in there, so when you unzip that front pocket, you can pull them out one at a time right from a hole in that pocket. And then underneath it, it's got space for diapers, sunscreen, bug spray, a med kit, like all right there, really easily accessible, because I carry an Ouch pouch with me with my daughter, like Band-Aids, Neosporin, stuff like that. And then the inside, the main pouch is just a main pouch, like you'd find in any, you know, decent utility bag. It's got plenty of space, but it's also got a folding, collapsible, pretty large diaper-changing mat, which this might not be something you're familiar with, because it's been a while since you've been running around with
a Don't play the old man card on me, bro.
I'm just saying, you know, you're already varsity-level dadding. Like, your kids are already out of diapers.
I got a 15-year-old, man. She just got potty trained a year ago.
She's got issues. I tell you what, like, when you're running around with a kid that's got a dirty diaper, there are no men's rooms in this country with a diaper-changing table. You never find a diaper-changing
table. Yes, there are. They're unisex bathrooms. I just saw one the other day, and I thought, what the hell is that doing in here?
Yeah, where do you live? In California, right? I'm not surprised at all that there's unisex bathrooms.
I guess in Georgia, most outhouses don't have those.
Exactly. You know, it's tough to find a clean space to change your kid's diaper. So having a really easily collapsible folding changing pad that doesn't take up much room in your pack, I'm a big fan of that too. So if you're going to be a tactical dad, which normally I would not recommend.
Yeah, stop it. I did not have you on to promote geeky behavior among veterans and wannabes.
I tell you what, if it works, it's not stupid. And so I'm keeping
it can work and be stupid depending on what color it is, okay?
Well, if you follow the Mike McNamara method of being really worried about what people think of you, then you can go and carry a regular diaper bag. But if you want something that's just utilitarian, that's my recommendation this week. I say go get one of those high-speed daddy diaper bags.
Where do I find this son of a... Oh, my God, are you kidding me? It's above the fold on loadoutroom.com.
You'll find it, man. I tell you, you can see my video review of it where I go digging through it, you know, and you can also see some pictures.
It doesn't look like a diaper bag. It looks like just a pack.
Exactly, right? The only thing that gives away pack.
Is that your garage?
That is, yeah. Whoa. Well, it's my workshop. I've got a garage and a workshop.
That's pretty high speed. I like your drill press.
Thanks, man. It's where I theoretically would still be making knives if I ever had time to make knives anymore.
Okay, but, now let me, I have this to say about that, okay? Like, don't order the olive drab or the coyote, right,
color. I would agree. Because right? like a boot in the San Diego
Airport. Yeah, you look like, dig me, I'm a combat veteran.
Oh, another thing that's really cool about this is those side pockets on either side are insulated. They're cooler pockets. So you can throw – it says you can fit two bottles in there, but I know for a fact you could also fit two Red Bulls and an ice pack with it. So you can – on both sides. So it's handy so you can carry some full bottles as well as some caffeine for yourself too. And I added a shot-stop ballistic insert because if you're going to go tactical, you might as well go bullet-resistant.
Here's a text message, right? Mac, even in Texas, we have family bathrooms. So I don't know what George's problem is. It might be that they're a bunch of hicks.
it might be that we're a bunch of hicks, but, you know, coming from Texas, which is a state that's not even sure if it wants to be in America on a regular interval.
I know. They're telling you, they're calling you, when Texas calls you a hillbilly, you might be a hillbilly.
You might be a hillbilly, you know, and yeah. So I tell you what, I'm not going to defend Georgia's lack of changing tables in their bathrooms. I'm also not going to say that I go shopping a lot of places that have family bathrooms because I like to shop local. Thank you very much. No, I'm just giving you guys a hard time. But no, in all reality, having a changing pad really is handy in a million situations. Especially my
Let me tell you, the whole coolest part about this is it doesn't look like a diaper bag. You can pull this off.
Yeah, I really think, so. Honestly, you could even just use it as a good quality backpack, you know? But, you know, that, especially that baby.
Well, you know
pocket.
What? There's a, for anybody, so if you're older, right, and you have to change your own diaper on occasion, you could
I tell you, man, I don't think, after being a parent, I don't think I'm ever going to go anywhere without baby wipes again. They're so useful.
Yeah, you can do a plethora of things with baby wipes. But yeah, as you get older, you could change your own diaper. Boom. Nope. Just drop there, right? Just throw your pack out. Right, you got your own changing table.
If you're in a situation where you have to change your own diaper, it might be tough for you to be that mobile with a backpack on. But if not, man, hey, go.
You can take the backpack off. All right. Here's another email, Mac. What a sad state of affairs. When Texas calls anybody a hillbilly, if you haven't been to Texas in a while, I'm not even sure those fools speak English.
I've actually only been to Texas once, and it was for not long. I was there just long enough to get into a fist fight with a guy who was beating up his wife through a car window.
What?
That's all I've ever done in Texas. I was a lance corporal at the time.
What city?
You know, I'm not even sure. I was driving cross country from up in upstate New York, where my Mustang had been in storage, to 29 Palms to bring my car out to the base after I had checked. You know, it was like maybe 6-7 months after I checked into my first duty station. And we were driving cross country through the top tip of Texas. It was my older brother and I. And probably the middle of the night, we came across this guy just beating the holy hell out of his wife. She was in the driver's seat. He was beating the hell out of her through the car window. I don't know why she didn't drive away.
How'd you see it? Were you just stopping at a gas station or something?
Yeah, we pulled into a gas station, and as we were walking into the gas station, we saw this happening parked just over to our right. So to my brother's credit, you know, he's not a military guy, but he immediately knew what I was going to go do, maybe just because he knows me. I went over and got involved in a very confrontational way, and my brother stood back, you know, maybe three, four yards at the back of the vehicle just to make sure that I had a grip of what was going on and to look for his buddy, which it turned out he did have a buddy. And so fortunately, my brother was there to intervene with his buddy. The two guys were awfully heated. You know, until we were willing to fight them, and then they eased off quite a bit, and the lady drove away in a hurry. We called the police, and we're on our way. That's my only experience in Texas. So my one experience in Texas wasn't that good. But I'm sure most of you guys don't beat up your wives. You just guys go to the family changing tables and...
There's those kind of idiots all over the country.
Oh, right? Absolutely. There's bad guys everywhere you go, you know.
Okay, here's another email. If he starts talking about his breast pump, I'm out. So I think...
You know, I got to tell you, there's plenty of room in here for your breast pump. And what I really like about breast pumps is that they really make your nipples pop, you know?
Whoa! So we just lost a listener right there. Thank you very much.
Every time you bring me on, I feel like your audience shrinks just a little bit.
No, they like you now. You've been here. How many years? How long have you been coming on All Marine Radio?
Yeah, it's got to have been a couple of years by now, right?
Wow, exactly. So you're like part of the family. People know you.
I'll tell you and what, they, man. I've got you listed on my website.
They've
they've
grown with you. They've seen you go from single person, living in rural Georgia, to having a baby, to all your neurotic behavior once you had the baby, and so I'm sure they feel like they know you.
Well, I mean, honestly, they do, and I know some of the listeners, too, thanks to, you know, I get some awesome feedback every time I come on this show, you know, from Twitter and Facebook, from people following up on things that we talk about, checking to see if I've read articles that we've discussed and stuff, and I really, really appreciate it.
Well, there you go. There you go. All right, Trump and Xi kind of hitting the reset button. negotiating with China on trade. Thoughts on that?
You know, I really do think that this falls into the same category as ongoing negotiations with North Korea, is that because of the state of the news cycle, we tend to place a lot more emphasis on every individual development in these relationships than is necessarily fair. And in that, I mean, diplomacy takes forever.
Right.
You know, it is a long game. And, you know, like every time there's a meeting between Trump and Kim Jong-un, we expect, you know, immediate and lasting change. Every time Donald Trump and Xi Jinping engage with one another, we expect immediate and lasting change. And some things are immediate, you know, like when he establishes new sanctions, that's relatively immediate. When we place new tariffs, that's relatively immediate. But when it comes to relationship development, you know, these things take forever. And the best way that I could describe that is, like, most of you guys out there have jobs that involve meetings, right?
Right.
So you know how ineffective meetings are at getting anything done, you know? So what we're really talking about here is the CEOs of two massive, massive corporations having a meeting. Now, for those of you who work in large corporations, you know full well that the CEO of your company knows very little about the day-to-day operations that are that actually do support the company's activity, right?
Right.
It's no different when Trump and Xi Jinping talk. They're talking, they're having high-level discussions, but it takes forever for any change that they really want to manifest to trickle down into actual effects in how either nation does business. You know, we run headlines as though everything's going to happen immediately because that's how you draw clicks. But the truth of the matter is that this is a real slow-going development, you know, and so as we're chasing down the relationship between the United States and China, I think it's important that we all remember that this is going to be going on for a long time. And chances are good it will continue to go on after Trump leaves office, whether he gets reelected for another term or not. Just because the nature of the economy is so complex, the way our two economies are interdependent on one another is also extremely complex. And then you have all those third line variables of how China's and America's relationships affect third party economies that fall somewhere in between the two of us. These things all matter. And as a result of which, the process is really slow going. So it's really hard to try to make, I would argue, it's really hard to try to say this is exactly what's going to happen when you see shifts in engagement like this, just because this is one of 100 that will take place over the span of the next couple of years. And it's a fight.
It's a
debate that's going to go on forever.
Let me give you my take. What we want from the Chinese breaks their system. We want them to stop forced technology transfers.
Which they're not going to do.
Right. And we want them to
respect our copyrights, which they're
exactly, intellectual property. So
they will, however,
the only way that happens is if the free democracies of the world get together and say, this has to stop.
Okay. And the problem with that is the amount of economic leverage China has. Is the reason why that's, I'm not saying that's impossible,
no.
But that's the challenge.
No, and then look, if you do that to one of us, we will all respond. And so you, again, the lesson of World War II, if it's peace through strength and peace through our alliances. And
I'm telling you,
and
I
when
think
we
that
do
China
that,
is doing a better job of leveraging those lessons than we are right now.
Well, I mean, they are a totalitarian state. It's kind of easy.
So they can get away with it,
yeah,
with a lot of things.
When you have to try to get everybody on the same sheet of music, and some people are in and some people are out. I read an article today about, you know, the greatest threat to NATO. The greatest threat to NATO, in my opinion, is Germany, right? Largest economy on the continent, but with no effective military. And so, because when NATO is strong, it doesn't matter what the issues are. What will Russia do in the face of a stronger Germany, a strong UK, a strong France, the United States, Poland, and all of our satellites? The answer to that is nothing.
Well, to be fair here, Russia already could not sustain a prolonged conflict with
right.
NATO, and
right.
they know that.
Right, and so you see my point, though. When the free nations of the world can act in generally in consonance, yeah, look that one up. So when they do that, there's no nation, to include China, that can stand up to that. For instance, even Canada is sailing ships through the Taiwan Straits now. Okay.
You're totally right. Here's the problem.
Right. What is China? What is China going to do?
A lot of these nations are hedging their bets because they know they can see the writing on the wall, and it's entirely possible that 50 years, 75 years from now, which in the span of a nation's history is a blink of an eye, it's entirely possible that all economic roads will lead to China as opposed to the United States. And that's the reason why you see some lawmakers within these nations reluctant to jump on China's case, because they don't want to solidify themselves as opponents of China in the event that China usurps the United States as the global economic and diplomatic leader. I think China's intent is not to go to war with the United States to secure that top spot. They're going to do it without ever firing a shot. They're going to do it by continuing to edge away at our lead in various ways, continuing to manage the perceptions of China globally through things like investing heavily in Hollywood and things like that. And eventually what you're going to find is the lead is just – it's going to – one day we're going to wake up and China will be in the lead. Nobody fired a shot. There was never a war.
I don't believe that.
I'm not saying that this is a sure thing. This is China's plan.
Oh, all right. I agree.
You know?
I agree.
And that's what I think a lot of lawmakers, especially lawmakers that maybe they're savvy to the fact that China is trying to position itself to be a leader, but they're not necessarily savvy to the far-reaching implications. There's plenty of naive lawmakers out there. Just check Twitter.
Right.
I think that a lot of these people are reluctant to play hardball with China because they're afraid that China ends up on top.
Well, again, if you do it alone, right? And these issues that we're talking about, forced transfer of technology, right, intellectual, you know, property rights, and then the unfair way that the Chinese do tariffs. I mean, just if you look at the imbalance of trade between the United States and China, right, it's not because we don't have products that they want to buy, but they tariff our products so that we can't sell. And you've heard the president talk about that. And they do
China
that.
Does one other thing with
hold on. So let me complete my thought. They do that to everybody, right? But you begin to sell into China. Now imagine if you're the Philippines and you're whatever you produce, be it sardines, right? Be it baskets or whatever. All of a sudden, all these factories are hiring second and third shifts, right? People are making more money, and that money is beginning to filter through your economy, right? And so you're seeing growth in your gross domestic product, and you're seeing growth in the standard of living in your country, and now you look at China and you say, quit screwing with our fishing boats. And they say, look, that's our natural resource. You need to get out of it, right? Or we might let you fish in it. And if you don't like that, and if you won't sign up for that, then guess what? All those second and third shift workers and all that extra money is going to go away because we'll shut that shit off so fast it'll make your head spin. Right?
And now here in the United States, that might not seem like that terrifying a proposition, but in the developing
I will tell you this. This is where they have people by the throat.
Absolutely.
Right? As a politician, it means you're not going to be reelected. It means you're out on your ass, as is your entire party. So you decide.
Most politicians is their number one concern.
Most? Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
So that's the game.
I'm trying to think of one I like. I can't come up with one yet. Yeah, there isn't any. All right. But no, you're 100% right. And another thing China does really effectively.
Say that again. What percent, right?
100%. If I could go higher, I would.
No wonder I have you on this program. I say 1,000%. When I do post-traumatic winning, I look at people and say, look, man, I know you don't want to believe some of this shit. Right? Like, if you have significant trauma and you still drink, you're going to have to stop. And I know Alex doesn't like that. But I'm telling you the truth. And if it was only 100% true, I wouldn't even bother you with it. But it's 1,000% true. So if you've got significant trauma in your life and you do drink, that shit unleashes the beast. And someday you're going to wind up living alone or with your dog. And the only reason your dog's going to be there is because your dog doesn't have a vote. So you may look at me today and say, piss off, old dude, right? But someday you're going to have a moment of clarity and you're going to have a choice to make. Make the right choice. How about that? 1,000% true?
The secret is to drink enough that you die before you end up alone. That's the secret.
There you go. There you go. There you go.
But another thing to talking about China's tariffs that they're really, really effective at with these is that So the way tariffs traditionally work, now, mind you, I'm not an economist. You know, there's a reason why I can barely pronounce the word. But the way tariffs traditionally work is you place a tariff on a foreign good because it then costs your populace more money to purchase that good. So when Donald Trump places tariffs on Chinese products, despite what Donald Trump may say to you, what he's really doing is he's raising the price of those products for the American consumer. The idea being that that would make the American consumer more incentivized to purchase the same product manufactured or produced in the United States because it'll cost less. The problem with this comes when you place tariffs on products that the United States doesn't provide or has no interest in producing.
Right.
So when you place a 25% tariff, let's say, on a product or a good that the United States either doesn't have the infrastructure or doesn't have the economic interest to provide its own consumers, all you really do is you're taxing American citizens more on that product, right?
Right.
It might drive sales down, right, which for China, for instance, might hit them in the pocketbook, but it also does hit Americans in the pocketbook as well.
Correct.
So what China's tariffs work, I would argue, more effectively often because China's really inexpensive production facilities give them the ability to mass produce just about whatever they want to mass produce for internal consumption,
right,
and in great volume. You know, the United States is far less industrial than China is in that regard. We tend to export culture and software and things like that, medicine, much more so than manufactured goods. So tariffs on manufactured goods or tariffs on crops that maybe we don't grow in large volume in the U.S. or in other allied nations, when you place tariffs on those goods, you're taking money out of American pockets as well as the Chinese. China, on the other hand, they have two benefits here. Number one, they can produce most of what they need in-house. But number two, their population doesn't have any real control over what the government does like we do here. So here in the States, those tariffs could eventually see you thrown out of office. You know, someone else is elected in your place. In China, that's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, so
no, so they can play the longer game, which is this reset, which gives them a little bit of relief from what Donald Trump had threatened, right? And it gets them closer to an election year. So even if Trump decides to reimpose those economic sanctions, let's just say it all blows up again before December and he does it, we'll only have to live with it for maybe a year before hopefully he's voted out of office and we'll contribute to that. Right,
that's 1,000%.
Right, that's the longer game, and that's what North Korea should be doing the same thing as
Iran has been doing for a long time
as is Iran. Yeah. So,
America has a schizophrenic foreign policy by the very nature of how we operate our republic, right? This is one of the things holding back NASA. It's one of the things holding back our overall defense initiatives. Is that, you know, we could feasibly elect a Democrat next year that thinks that we need to shrink the footprint of the U.S. I mean, to be fair, this is what Obama did. He tried the office space Milton approach to our defense initiative, which was instead of changing policy, instead of changing our global commitments, we just tried to turn down how much money we poured into the military and let the problems work themselves out. What is the result there? Airplanes start falling out of the sky, maintenance stops happening, training stops happening, ships start crashing into each other because we're not willing to pay for our defense commitments, but we're still forced to meet them. If we do that again, now you know that I'm not necessarily a Donald Trump fan, but this is one thing he's done effectively is say, if we're going to have all these commitments all over the world, we need to be able to fund the military in such a manner as to actually meet those commitments safely.
Right.
Not everything he said about commitments is right. For instance, when he said he wanted to cede shipping lanes to places like China, that's not correct. But he definitely hit the nail on the head with that one. Next year, that could all get turned on its head again. And all of a sudden, the United States isn't in a position in the South China Sea to stand up as effectively to China as we have been over these past 3 years. So it really is, whether you're a fan of Trump or not, and to be fair, I'm not a fan of Trump, but I do worry about a knee-jerk candidate getting elected and just coming in and saying whatever Trump was doing was wrong,
right,
and taking back the progress we've made on things like that, you know?
I don't see how a really far left-leaning candidate, you know, doesn't get the vote at the center of the country. Now, Hillary Clinton took every vote, right, from every big city in the nation and couldn't win with us. So at some point, you got to appeal to Ohio, Pennsylvania, and the center of the country. And the policies that you see on display in the first debate are not going to win you, are not going to win you friends there, because that's not how they live in rural Georgia. That's not how they live in any rural area in the country. They provide for themselves. They take care of themselves. And there is still that mindset in flyover country. And so, to me, Hillary Clinton almost won as a moderate, okay? How do you go further left and take moderate votes? I don't think you can. And I know the thought is, well, this is just to get through the primary, and then in the general election they'll come back to the middle. Well, good luck, man. By the time they do their 20 debates and you have all those sound bites pinning you down about free, you know, healthcare, about free college, right, and all the rest of that shit, how do you make those all go away before people have already judged you? I don't know that you can.
You know, and I don't know either, to be honest. I think that it's going to be an interesting election, if only because Donald Trump is obviously a polarizing figure, right? But what a lot of people lose sight of when you hear polarizing is that means the people in his camp are fervently in his camp, you know? And it's not a small portion of the population. I don't think that Trump lovers are necessarily an electable majority in the country right now, but they very easily could be.
Don't have anywhere else to go, though.
Like, exactly.
He's not my favorite dude, but, I mean, honestly, I think his policies, right? I think his policy with China is right. I think his policy with North Korea. Again, Alex knows
he's right about space defense.
Right.
You know?
2 years ago, I had a son out in the Western Pacific. Right? And we were, and North Korea is shooting missiles over Japan, shooting them near China. Right? That's a pretty uncomfortable feeling, right?
You know, and I got into a bit of a discussion on Twitter yesterday with someone about Donald Trump just having these, quote, PR meetings with Kim Jong-un. And I said the same thing to her as we were just talking about how diplomacy is slow going. This is what I want to see a president do, which is look for any feasible means to avoid war, if at all possible. If we got to go to war, we got to go to war. But I don't want to go to war unless we've got to go to war. And a president's duty is to keep us from going to war if we don't need it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that Donald Trump has been doing an effective job of that with North Korea. I'll be honest with you. I would love to see a candidate that I felt was more electable than Donald Trump. I'd love to see a candidate come out and be a reasonable candidate. I'm not sure that a reasonable candidate can get elected in today's America. You need to cater specifically to your base. Otherwise, you become vilified by both sides. You know?
Here's an interesting question for you, because you're a multimedia guy. Mac, I have a question for both you and Alex. Do you guys think that Trump and his use of Twitter has changed the way presidents will serve forever?
I hope not. I hope that Trump is in his use of Twitter. I hate when people say, I'm embarrassed of our president. I'm embarrassed to be American. Right. Because being American means so much more than the executive officer in the Oval Office. Being American means a million things a day that have nothing to do with Washington, D.C. But I will say, every time I see Donald Trump's name pop up on Twitter, I cringe. You know, it's not always cringeworthy, but it's often cringeworthy. You know, when he's saying things like, it's not fair that the United States is paying its Navy to police shipping lanes all over the world, it's as though there's no one in the room there who remembers World War II and could tell him that we built this massive military infrastructure for a reason. And it's the reason we're the only superpower left on the planet. Because we maintain this influence everywhere, you know? When he says things like we're going to have Sherman tanks, you know, brand new Sherman tanks in Washington, D.C. for July 4th, I go, come on, man. Can somebody not read these tweets before you start spitting them out? So I sincerely hope not. I hope that if Twitter stays an active part of a presidential administration, I hope that it's run by the same PR and professionals that handle the rest of the executive branch's communications, as opposed to just being a 70-year-old man on a gold toilet tweeting about China. I would really much rather there was a strategy in place behind our geopolitical communications. But, you know, who knows, man? You keep hearing about celebrities potentially running for president. I'm really hoping that in this next election, we see a reversion back, including with Donald Trump, as he pursues re-election, to something that's more akin to politics as usual. As much as everyone elected Donald Trump because they wanted an outsider, I think that we've effectively proven now that just being outside doesn't make you better. If we want to elect an outsider, we need you to be an outsider that can leverage your ideas in an effective way to kind of create a coalition of people behind you, as opposed to only solidifying your base. Because in all honesty, the country's social problems, our domestic issues, aren't going to get better as long as we keep seeing politics as something that we can win. Politics isn't supposed to be about something that isn't supposed to be about total victory for one party or the other party. The idea is supposed to be that we're walking this tightrope between going too far left and too far right, because too far to either extent isn't good for overall liberty. The idea is to maintain this tightrope, you know, and it's a constant struggle, you know. Freedom, a democracy, is a constant struggle for every generation. The fight isn't the same for everybody. In some generations, the fight was a literal war. For other generations, it's a fight with yourself about the garbage that you're going to share on your Facebook newsfeed. And as crazy as it sounds that your Facebook newsfeed could have an overall effect on the direction of the country, that's literally what has brought us to where we are today, has been our reliance on social media and our willingness to share things just because we feel like it's true, or to hate share things because we want people to be mad with us. Until we can change how we approach politics, things aren't going to get better.
And your answer relative to his use of Twitter, has he forever changed the president's office?
I hope not. I guess that's my best answer. Feasibly, yeah, he may have.
I think he did. I think given the modern 24-hour news cycle, one of the things you learn as a politician is if you don't answer, then what the other person said is true.
And there's truth to that.
Whether you like him or not, or whether any of us like him or not, what he's taught politicians everywhere is do not let it go unanswered, and don't be afraid to double down on it in the face of it.
But this is what I mean about I hope that we smarten up to this, because what we're seeing is we're seeing answers without any actual meaning behind them. We're seeing answers for the sake of answers. We're seeing things that are lies, whether intentionally or unintentionally. We're seeing getting a response out whether or not it's true isn't the answer, I think, long-term. And there's a reason why everyone from politicians to corporations employ PR professionals to manage their communications
strategy. Yeah, but is that all overrated? Look at him.
I would argue that it's not all overrated. Oh, okay. Look at his approval ratings. You know, the idea is not just to maintain power. I understand that politically that's how we see it.
Yeah, if you think the idea is just not to maintain power, then I think you're fundamentally out of touch with politicians.
No, what I'm saying is that politicians' intent might be just to maintain power, but as a populace, it's our responsibility. And yeah, guess what? As American citizens, the state of the nation is, I hate to break it to you, your responsibility.
Oh, shit!
And we need to be big kids now.
It can't be, because our voting numbers don't indicate that we know that.
Our voting numbers don't indicate that we know that, because we, as a people, don't know that. You know, people, you know.
No, we do know that. We all go to civics class, don't we?
You and I know that.
Social studies?
Your listeners very likely know that as well. But if you were to run to the grocery store right now and do a poll of, you know, 10 people, I would argue that you and I and the people listening to this right now are probably far better informed than your average Joe. And that's not through any fault of their own. It's just because real life is a pain in the ass. You know, when you've got problems that are manifesting in your real life, it's hard to worry about foreign policy, right?
True.
When you're at the emergency room getting stitched up with your kid on your lap, you're not worried about North Korea,
yeah,
right?
Maslow's turn.
Hierarchy of needs, right? Yeah. Nailed it.
But I think I think Maslow screwed some things up. I think I need to
tweet. I agree. I actually don't buy into the hierarchy of needs either.
I think there are, but he doesn't mention money in his hierarchy of needs.
I think that there's an argument to be made that money's included in more than one of the steps. But I agree with you.
Money's an implied task in there?
Yes. Yeah, money's an implied task.
Let me tell you, if you're stupid enough to think money's implied, right, when you build your ladder, then you shouldn't be a ladder builder.
Well, the idea is that money is make-believe. You know, so we're talking about Maslow's hierarchy.
Was that arrow going into your finger make-believe, or was that real?
No, money, I'm telling you, man, this is one thing that, it's just one of those mind blowers that if you're ever up way too late drinking a little bit too much because of your post-traumatic stress, you're trying to make sure that you die before you end up alone, so you're sticking to liquor. And when you're sitting there thinking about it, money, the DMV, your driver's license, our voting system, the border between us and Mexico, this is all shit a bunch of monkeys made up. You know, it's up to us to make this stuff work properly. We all too often accept these systems as just natural laws. They're not natural laws. They're man-made creations, money included, which means that when we're talking about things like how we manage China, this should not be stuff outside of the realm of possibility, because these systems that are so complex that the IRS tax system is a great example. It's so complex that we just accepted at face value. These things are things that we invented. We made them up, which means we can fix them. The healthcare industry. We don't need to throw away America's healthcare system. It is broken. It requires fixing. That doesn't mean we need a new system in its place, because when you take 11% of the entire population of America is employed in America's healthcare system, if you were to take that and make it a public sector thing and drop salaries and the amount of money flowing into the healthcare apparatus in this country, you could kickstart a new depression. With 11% of the country all of a sudden having a huge drop in their income, and all of the subsidiary portions of the economy suffering as a result. We need to make these changes gradually, and we can, because we made these things up in the first place. Don't accept politicians that tell you anything ever has to be all or nothing, because we're talking about throwing away a book that someone wrote to replace it with a book that someone wrote. It's all bullshit. It's all make-believe.
It's all bullshit.
What's great about that is that we can fix it.
I hate that. All right. I want to ask you some questions about voter turnout.
Oh, man, you're going to get me all riled up, man. I cannot believe that in this last presidential election, as in every presidential election prior to that, the entire country was so happy to fight this war. Digitally, on television, out in the streets, and then voter turnout was, I mean, basically the same as ever. Most people just couldn't be bothered to vote. We're happy to all choose sides when Antifa starts beating up a conservative blogger. We're happy to all choose sides, you know, when people 3,000 miles from us, 12 guys get into a fight with 12 other guys that have nothing to do with us ever, but we're all going to pick a team. We're happy to pick sides when high school kids are on TV yelling at, you know, guys who claim to be Vietnam combat vets. Yeah. We all want to kill each other about this stuff. But we can't be bothered to actually vote. And what's even more appalling than the presidential election are local election turnouts, which have not seen a spike at all since Donald Trump was elected. And I hate to break it to you guys, but your local government really has a much larger say in things that affect your life day to day than the national government does. So, goddammit, America, go vote.
It's interesting because the Pew Center for Research, right?
Which I'm going to be honest. I know that there are people out there that have a lot of problems with the Pew Center. I don't. I don't think that every bit of content they've ever released has been on the ball. I don't think no outlet is 100% right. But I think that there's some good stuff to come out of Pew.
And this one's entitled "Younger Generations Outvoted Boomer and Prior Generations in 2018." So there's a line that's tracking. Millennials, right, and voting percentages. So baby boomers and those older than baby boomers, right? 80 million voted in 1982. That number in 2018 was down to 60 million, 60.1 million. Gen Z millennials and Gen X composed 62.2 million for the first time.
Now, I would want
to
ask,
according to Pew, right?
The
okay, so here's
older.
My point. My point is that Trump got elected with votes from Gen Z, millennials, and Gen X.
Well, it pays to remember that although most millennials don't seem to know this, millennials are older than internet memes seem to think. I'm a millennial, technically speaking.
Whoa, people that old can be millennials?
Absolutely. You know, millennials are older folks than I think that is commonly understood. We think millennials are teenagers.
And how old are you?
20-year-olds. I'm trying to remember exactly what the startup year for millennial is, but it's early 80s. You know, which means that there are millennials now who are rapidly approaching their 40s. You know?
I don't think you're a millennial if you're 40.
The cutoff for millennials is 1981 through 1996. Of course, any generational cutoff is technically bullshit because it's stuff we made up. But theoretically speaking, 81. So dating back to 81, which means my older brother just barely missed the millennial thing and is still technically, I think, Gen X or whatever.
But doesn't the march of time with voters suggest that when you're in your 20s, you're all full of piss and vinegar?
And you're idealistic.
Right. And then in your 30s, and you start paying property taxes, then you get pissed, and you start sliding towards the right-hand side of the scale, and you don't believe in the bullshit anymore, and you learn that somebody's got to pay for it, and as time goes on, more and more people slide right.
Well, you know, my younger brother, I love him to death. He's a great example. He's an awesome dude. He and his fiance both work for Blizzard in esports, which is like, I don't even really understand what it is that they do for a living. It's they do video game tournaments globally. It's a really cool job. But they are your classic example of millennial liberals, which is they're not all that plugged into politics. But they see things that they perceive as unfair and may even be unfair and have kind of an idealistic and I would argue naive idea about how to fix it. This is your average Bernie Sanders voter, right? These people aren't coming from a bad place necessarily. They're just saying, how the hell am I supposed to pay for college so it should be free? How the hell am I going to pay for healthcare so it should be free? These are people, they're facing the same problems that older guys that lean conservative are facing, which is how the hell am I going to pay for this? Older guys understand that anything the government pays for, they pay for with their money, money.
But how do we get to the point that, yeah, it was expensive, and yeah, I chose to go there, but you should pay for it? How do we get there?
You know, and there is a sense of entitlement to it. There certainly is. But I think part of what it is that my generation grew up being taught that you have to go to college to have any value in our society, which isn't true at all, right? So we created a college education bubble in my millennial generation where people were going to school for degrees in underwater basket weaving, because if you meet someone and for some reason college comes up in conversation, I can't tell you how many of my buddies are a little embarrassed or a little shy about admitting that they didn't get a bachelor's degree. For what, man? You don't need a bachelor's degree to be, a great example, my best buddy, I won't give his name in case he doesn't want me to drop it, but
come on,
he has a high-level position in GE Military Aviation based not on having a college degree, but based on work experience and busting his ass from a lower-level position over the span of years.
Oh,
you know?
That has no validity in life? Your real-life experience?
It has absolute validity, but in our society, I mean, I can say as an HR manager when I was recruiting, if a position required a college degree and I brought in a candidate that didn't have one, that was on me. I had to explain myself.
Right. I mean, it comes with footnotes, right? And you did.
Exactly.
And so it's not like life experience doesn't count.
But it often genuinely
does. So I've got two candidates for you. I've got Poindexter, who's got a master's in whatever, and I've got, you know, Larry the Cable Guy. And Larry's been in the industry for 12 years. He's won this award, this award, this award, but he's 6 units short of a BA.
I can tell you the reason why this becomes complicated.
You're going to meet both of them.
So if I post a job listing that says, I'm looking for a mechanical engineer, master's degree required, 6 years experience required, blah, blah, these are the requirements for the position. These are my prerequisites.
Okay.
And then I have three candidates make it to the final round of interviews. I interview all three. One of them has that master's degree that was required. One of them has a bachelor's degree and almost finished his master's.
Okay.
The other one has been a mechanical engineer since the late 1970s. Never went to school for it. Maybe he has a two-year diploma. But he's been doing this job in the field practically for decades, right?
Okay.
Now, to me, I want that guy. I want the guy who's got the life experience behind him. The problem is the guy with that master's degree then feasibly, not necessarily a guaranteed win, but he feasibly has grounds for a lawsuit.
What are the grounds?
That in the job requisites included master's degree, and I hired someone who didn't have one, even though he was in the running and did have
one. Then you should rewrite the job description and not put it as a requirement to have a master's degree.
Then things get more complicated, because every time I post a job listing, I get 10,000 responses. Right?
Oh, and then cry me a river, loser.
Well, you know, it's you can say crime.
Now you're a victim. Or you need to at least put some language. You need to put some language in there.
It's about being able to do your job practically.
That causes you to be able to have the leeway so that some pinhead with a master's doesn't sue you for having the latitude to do that.
What incentive do I have as a company to change my hiring practices around just to make sure that Mike McNamara is not mad at me? There's no economic
you'll be broken out of business and it won't matter to me, and I don't care you hired the best companies have the best people.
The best companies do not always have the best people.
Then how do they become the best companies? Because shitty people do great things. It doesn't work like that, bro.
Because you don't need to have all the best people to be extremely effective. You only need to have some great people to be extremely effective. Just like any Marine infantry unit, you know the.
Hey, don't play that game with me. Okay, I've got two questions before you leave.
But there's one of us that's a real warrior, and he's the reason we all get back.
Now, two questions. One, does Alex have a solution for the Antifa issue? Yeah, what do you think about the Antifa video that's circulating around them?
All right, there's two versions of Alex. There's the version of Alex, there's professional Alex who doesn't, and then there's like six beers deep Alex at a bar who does. In my opinion, if you go to one of these protests on either side of that fence, if you're an Antifa guy or you're a conservative guy that wants to go punch an Antifa guy in the face, you're an asshole. Either way, Antifa is probably legitimately 300 strong. We're not talking about a giant army of idiots. We're talking about a small group of idiots that garner a lot of publicity, you know? And I would argue that you'll see similar crazy on the extreme right hand side of the spectrum as well. They don't garner as much publicity as of late because for some reason some people just really want to hero worship Antifa. Antifa is, I would argue, first and foremost, they're about anarchy, not about liberalism. They're not about progressivism. They're not about advancing anyone's rights. They're domestic terrorists. They're going to go punch stuff in the face until they get their way, and they're not even sure what their way is.
Right. Then after they get there, you say, okay, now what? They're like, what? Okay.
Take those guys that are protesting and put them in charge and see how little gets accomplished because they don't have a plan. And when you don't have a plan, you're short-lived. You know, so if Antifa organizes, if they get some strong, strong leadership that can give them a unified vision, Antifa could end up being something that I would really be worried about. Right now, as far as I'm concerned, Antifa is nothing but another group of assholes that are out looking to start fights. You know, in my opinion, they're not all that different than the Ku Klux Klan.
Just a different set of beliefs, but the same.
Exactly.
You know, what's interesting is, you know, the way they go about business is as fascist as what they say they hate.
Exactly.
And
man.
Whatever.
Anybody who uses violence. All right. So, you know, I'm a Marine. I am a big defense guy. I believe that war is horrible and necessary. However, when we're talking domestic politics, anyone who uses violence to convey their message is a bad guy. It's as simple as that.
And you would think that we would all like, yeah, everybody.
I don't know why we can't.
But you see polls of American people when asked that say, when these people are saying these things, do you have the right to go attack them and shut them up? And you see a fair number, more than you would. It would be. I wish I should go find the article as I'm
you
quoting.
You could see otherwise intelligent seeming people
say yes. They don't have the right to say that. It's like, wait a minute.
Like this whole punch a Nazi thing. Guys, I hate to break this to you, but those dudes that claim to be Nazis aren't, they didn't fight in World War II. They don't serve Adolf Hitler. They're not the Nazis that we fought in World War II. They're assholes.
Yeah, and they're living in their parents' basement.
Exactly.
Okay. Playing video games, and they want to be they need attention, so they do this shit. Okay. One more question.
One last thing. My fear is that we establish this precedent that like some beliefs you're allowed to respond to violence with, and the problem is that the crowd is fickle. So next year, those beliefs that we can meet with violence may change. We don't want to establish the precedent that whoever the crowd says we can beat up, we can beat up. We need to not beat each other up. Okay, sorry.
All right.
I'm done.
Here's another email. Interesting. This is the last one's a guy email, so I'll save that for last. There's on the news today, there is some comments that the president made about homeless people. Do either one of you have a solution about homeless people? So, Alex, you got a solution relative to homeless people?
I'm not savvy to the comments Trump made today, but homelessness is a really complicated problem, especially for someone like me who tends to lean conservative, right? I'm not opposed to social reform and welfare programs by and large, across the board. I think that there are needs for some of these programs in a civilized society. You don't just let people die, right?
Got it.
But you need to come up with some kind of a system that's very difficult to abuse without being so bureaucratic that no one can access it, right? And I don't have that solution. But that the solution is, you know, the magic solution is come up with a system that can help people get on their feet. I hate comparing the United States to any European nation because we are massive in terms of geography and population.
Right. Sounds like you're about to do it, though.
But I'm going to do it anyway. There are some European nations that use a program called Employer of Last Resort, which means as opposed to Social Security or welfare, if you're unable to work, then you'd collect their form of Social Security. But if you're able to work, then you go to a program called Employer of Last Resort, which is effectively you're bettering your community on the government's dime. And it does a couple of things. It gives you job skills that you could feasibly take into the private sector.
Yeah, but these people won't go to those things.
Well, that's the problem. The problem
this is a
kid growing up.
It's a mental health thing, everybody. It's not.
I'm a trailer park kid. You know, I came from the trailer park. My parents worked their way out of it. And by the time I was in high school, we owned a home. And now I live, my daughter is growing up in such a better environment than I had. One generation is all it took, you know, for us to really pull ourselves up into the middle class.
Right.
But in that same trailer park, you know, my good buddy Kevin, I distinctly remember to this day, I went to his house because I was never a big wrestling guy, but he was. So we were going to watch WrestleMania.
Right.
And his mom was complaining about how much the pay-per-view cost.
Right.
And Kevin, who was a real jerk because we're teenagers, was like, why don't you get a damn job? And she was like,
whoa,
why would I work at McDonald's because welfare pays the same? And that's the problem. The problem is that for a lot of these people, you know, they're not thinking big picture. They're not worried about macroeconomics. They're not worried about America's deficit. They're just worried about being comfortable and living their life. And why am I going to go to work when I don't have to? Which is literally the problem with communism. We need to find a way to stop that. And in order to do that, it'll be portrayed as brutal in the short term, I would imagine, if someone introduced a program where these people who are able to work but haven't been working suddenly have to.
I don't see. To me, it's not a question of able to work. I think that you could. It's that segment of our society that you could. You know, you could have the Uber car sitting outside of their home at 7:30. We'll pick you up. We're going to take you to work, and they'll walk off the job. It's that.
Oh, they will.
It's the land of, you know, most of these people. I mean, years and years ago, we're institutionalized.
No, we don't
do that anymore. So to me, we have to build some kind of like camp because I'll give you a quick story. I got elected. I know. But let me tell you,
to go to FEMA death camps. Next.
You don't have a you don't have a right. Okay, you don't have a right to come live on my sidewalk, right? Just because whatever happened to you, because the city not going to run you out of living on my sidewalk with your needles and your waste and all that.
And here's the
come
thing,
on,
I agree
that's
with
bullshit.
100%. But I'll play devil's advocate here.
Okay.
In a nation as powerful economically as the United States, with as much infrastructure as we have, there is very little excuse for us to just let kids die on the street, right?
Right.
There's no excuse for that.
Right.
So the question becomes, how do you, to address the question at hand with homelessness, how do you take people who don't have homes and put them in homes without addressing the problems that led to them being homeless?
That's what I say. It's a mental health issue. So
I think it's not just that. It's a cultural issue.
No, I don't. I believe the majority of that stuff is mental health. And there are people
I think a lot of people that are homeless do have mental health issues.
Dude, look, if it was just money and jobs, there's jobs out there. There's welfare. There's social programs. The people that you find homeless are beyond those programs. Their lives are such shit shows that they are beyond those programs. And
I think that's definitely the case for some, but not all.
I do. I think it's a majority. And then let me give you my experience as a city council member. We had a shelter. We doubled the capacity because our capacity was at 90X% all the time. Okay, and so then what happened?
And one could argue it's gonna with the new shelter it'll stay at 90% because that many
no,
people.
No, you don't need to argue that. So we doubled the capacity, right? And we brought in a dentist because we surveyed what's the one service that the homeless population could really use. Well, I mean, dental work, free dental work. Okay, so we'll have a dentist come work. You know, one day a week, right? I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday. So a year later, the guy comes, we're having a meeting. Where are we in terms of capacity? And I expect we're going to hear 60, 70%, right? We're at 93%. What happened? With the increase in services with the dental, we've become now a regional hub for homeless.
Absolutely, man. And you know, and
so how do we? Well, what about job? It's just like, look, these people, again, for some reason, their mental health issues. Then you have got to stay in a certain part of the city. When's the last time you've been to San Diego?
That's been some time for me now. It's been years.
Okay. San Diego, right? When I was in college in the late 70s, early 80s. The downtown, like many downtowns around the nation, was dying. Okay? It was old warehouses. They have been on a 30-plus year program to renovate the Embarcadero, the waterfront, all of it. San Diego is unbelievable now. Seaport Village, right? The Embarcadero, right? But it's got mild weather, which attracts homeless people. And yep. Now it's beautiful, which attracts people who give handouts. And so what do you think happened to downtown?
They came riddled with homeless people.
And the problems with that,
would
it's
not be homeless in.
It's yeah, no kidding. The cold weather.
I was just in Denver and every corner. Denver's a beautiful city. It's a very clean, very well kept city. Every corner had at least two homeless people on it.
Right, and let me just tell you, what goes with it is that downtown smells like urine. It's disgusting. And if you talk to anybody who's been to San Francisco lately,
I was just going to say,
they will tell you.
Imagine if you paid
$500,000
for your one-bedroom condo just to have a guy shit on the sidewalk out in front of it every morning.
Yeah.
You know?
So look, there comes a point where your civil rights stop and the public good needs to be exercised, right? We need to have camps with services. Now, can we keep them in there? No, but you should not be allowed to live under underpasses, right? Cops should have enough authority to, if you put up a tent, they come, they take down the tent, they call the homeless transportation service, and you are detained and transported back there to get a hot meal and a cot and stay there. We don't want you living on our streets. Get that message.
But the problem with that, though, is that, again, just like these other solutions we're talking about, we're solving the problem after the fact as opposed to engaging with it before.
I wish we could. Yeah, I don't know how to do that before.
I don't know how to stop people from falling to that level before we can engage with it. But I think the only real lasting solution would be to have programs that engage people before they get there. Right.
Right. But you can't stop the march of people that do destructive behaviors and wind up homeless. I mean, that's going to happen. So what do you do with them now that we don't institutionalize?
We're only a short ways away from not having enough room in the camps anymore. You know,
well, that would be okay.
You saw in your own community.
That would be okay. Not having enough rooms. We'll build a bigger camp. And we'll have all the services there. They can get health care. They can get fed. They can get mental health services. They can get all that.
People don't have to work. They're not gonna. All right. So I don't think that the idea is to just keep building more camp until we have enough camp.
So what is it? What do we do? Do we get the water cannon and the dogs out and we shoo them away? What do we make them go?
You need a lasting solution, not a Band-Aid, you know? And I don't know what the lasting solution is.
Well, you can't say that shit and then not have a solution. We need a lasting solution. I don't got one.
Why homelessness has been a problem in perpetuity. It was a problem for the Roman Empire. It's because it is.
Yeah, let me tell you. I don't see any paintings that depict Roman homeless people, right, as a big problem in Rome.
I don't see a ton of paintings that depict homeless people in Denver either. They're still there.
We have images though now. Hello.
Well, they were light on cameras back then. So if you're going to paint something, it had to be something worthwhile. You know, this is what it really comes down to is that no matter what, there's going to be people who shoot people or kill people if you get rid of all the guns. No matter what, there's going to be people that, like you said, lack the mental stability to maintain a residence. No matter what, in a civilization the size of America's, out of 330 million people, there are going to be a lot of people that fall through cracks because it's impossible to make a system that big without cracks.
Okay. Here's from a retired Marine Corps Master Gunnery Sergeant, I believe. Mac, homelessness is directly tied to our lackluster immigration policy. Drives down wages. Over the long term, people get left behind and become mentally ill. Yes or no?
I could see there being some truth to that, but I would argue that the immigration problems we have in this country affect everybody in every economic sector. B-1B visas, for instance, coming from China and India, are a huge problem in tech industries for middle-class workers as well. I think mental health's a bigger issue than immigration for homelessness. But I don't think immigration isn't an issue for homelessness. I think he's definitely nail on the head in the fact that they're related, but I don't think it's the biggest problem.
I don't think they're related. I think illegal immigrants are afraid to be homeless.
Yeah, I don't think that you'll see a lot of but what I think he's contending is that the low-income jobs that these homeless people might be able to compete for are the ones that are being usurped by immigrants. And maybe there's some truth to that. I could buy it, but I don't think that's the biggest cause of it. I think drugs, alcohol, dependency, mental issues. I think if you want to file dependency issues in with mental health issues, then I'm with Mac that mental health is the vast majority of the problem. I think drug dependency is a big part of it. But I also think that there is a certain percentage of people out there who fell into, you know, a self-defeating cycle. And even if they have every intent of breaking that cycle, they lose the means. They lack the means to break the cycle. That may well be the vast minority, you know. But I think back to, it's hard for me to take a hard line on people who live in poverty because that's where I come from. You know, these are my people. And I was born in a trailer that didn't have running water, and our electricity came via extension cord from a nearby farm. So we were right on the cusp of homeless when I came into this world. And my parents busted their ass to make a better life for their kids. And they were already in the process of it when I got here. But my parents always turned down social programs because of my father's pride. But I think that it may have been better for us growing up if he hadn't, you know. So I do think that there are hardworking Americans out there that just need a break. I think that the homelessness issue.
Yeah, but don't you think? Like when we throw you in the cattle car and you come to Camp Happy, and you get off the bus, right? We de-louse you, right? We
This sounds like a publicity spectacle.
No, but you know, she might show up because you know how that'll work. So you go through the line, and we make sure you know we identified you, and we probably have a file on you, right? Because this is not the first time. This is not the first time you've been here.
Civil liberties being.
Oh, I know. But we're trying to help you, whether it's just feed you and give you a bed or get you into a program.
If the police take you into custody, we're not trying to help you.
But we can't continue. There's like 35,000 people living homeless in Los Angeles.
I agree. And this is what this is the inherent problem with this situation is that it is extremely difficult to create a solution within the framework of our rights, right? It's really hard. And then you're competing on one side with the Constitution and you're fighting on the other side with human nature, which is it's our human nature. There's a reason why we like fat pills. Why do we go to the drive-thru and keep eating McDonald's? Because we are hardwired to want to work less and eat more. We want more calories and less effort. It's an evolutionary trait that we still have to this day. What do we want to do? We want to eat, we want to lay down, and we want to bang. Right?
What?
These are our evolutionary incentives. These are our must-dos. We need
don't throw your own lifestyle at the rest of us.
And we want to procreate. This is human nature. And so as long as you create a system that allows people to work less and keep eating, there's going to be a certain amount of the population that's just going to lean into that. You know? And there's a worthwhile discussion to have about the technological and the cultural advancements we've made as a society, where eventually so much of our country is going to be automated that there's a chance that employment is going to be harder and harder to find. Now, I happen to believe that America's already been a model of this, that as we've moved away from an industrial model, we haven't lost jobs. We've just changed the nature of the jobs. And that may well hold true, but there's a chance that we find ourselves in a future that is so advanced that there just isn't enough work for how many people we have.
So we're going to have to pay people not to work.
And I don't like that model. That's a fear I have. I do not like, you know, I love that a lot of people have this utopian.
Okay, just for the record, your use of the term and bang is now getting reaction in my email, okay?
Well, you know, if any of you have ever been a
how about the word procreate?
Well, I mean, if you
did
want
it have to be an did it have to be
a little romance?
Did it have to be an emotional term like bang? The chef used the term ball last week.
What?
And a woman wrote me and said, "I haven't heard that term in over 30 years." Well, only old people would know actually what it meant. So
I'm showing up how senior I'm.
Exactly, you're like borderline baby boomer with that little piece of. No, you know. Again, you're right. You're 100% right in that. You know, at what point do your rights run out and the community's rights begin?
This is only loosely related, but my favorite Dave Chappelle quote is, "I don't care what you want to call yourself. My question to you is, to what extent do I have to participate in your self-image?" You know, and we live in a society now that wants to respect your decision to do whatever you want to do, whether it's be a crazy guy who lives on the street or what have you. And I don't think that is the route to progress. I don't think that's the direction we need to go. But this is the fight we're fighting, is that we need to find a way to meet in the middle where instead of the most hardcore conservative perspective, which is effectively only the strong will survive, economically speaking, it's the basis of unregulated capitalism, and then all the way on the other side of the spectrum where it's we should all just share each other's wives and dinners. Somewhere in the middle there, we need to find a middle ground where it is true some people are inevitably going to fall through the cracks, but we need to find a system that benefits not just the country's citizenry, but the country's future. You know, it's not just about making sure everybody's got a warm bed to sleep in tonight. It's also about making sure that there's warm beds for our children and our children's children. And I'm not sure that an economic model that where we support do whatever you want and the government will pay for it. I just don't see how that leads to a good future for the United States.
It doesn't. Let me correct myself. Somebody sent me a link. L.A. County population homeless jumps, right? In 2011, which is the first data point on this graph, there was 39,414 homeless people in Los Angeles County, right? Los Angeles County. In 2019, so 8 years later, there is 58,936, so almost 59,000. So an increase of 20,000 homeless people in Los Angeles. So, living on the streets every day.
And in my mind, I would argue that that is a strong argument for how really lenient social programs aren't always a solution. You know, you see lots of gun violence in communities that have really strict gun laws. You see lots of homelessness in communities that have laws to protect the homeless. And I'm not saying that this is because liberalism is inherently flawed, because I do believe in maintaining a balance. But I think that this is a good example of how just using the liberal approach isn't going to solve this problem. It's going to require hard answers from a bit more of a conservative mind to manifest real change. But again, it can't be an all or nothing thing for a lot of these solutions, because we're not talking about an all or nothing populist. We need a government that represents its citizenry, and you need multiple viewpoints in order to do that. You always need a dissenting opinion for democracy to work. So I think that what we need is we need to see some dickheaded conservatism in some of these really, really liberal environments to address some of these issues. And one could make the same argument for really, really strictly conservative environments, that they might benefit from a little bit more liberal dissent in their communities as well. I sound unfair because I'm having trouble coming up with an example of where that would benefit, but I'm sure there is one. It's just eluding me right now.
The story that I'm looking at chronicles L.A. County's fight with homelessness, where there was a measure passed in California, I think it was Measure H or Proposition H, that funded in Los Angeles County homelessness. I believe that's what it's talking about. So in 2017, the number was like 55,000. Right. In 2018, the number went down to 52,000. Okay, so there was a net decrease in homeless people, and that gave people great hope. Right. In 2019, the number goes from 52,000 all the way up to 59,000. And
what
so,
that tells me is that the study 1 year wasn't executed properly.
You know, that's exactly what I was going to say, because that number goes pretty on a constant basis. It goes from 39,000 to 2 years later to 40,000 to 3 years later, 45,000 to.
And, you know, and this speaks to things like the census, which for some reason now is the source of a lot of political debate. When the reality of the matter is that the census isn't – they don't send you a form and then use that form to decide whether or not they're going to come and arrest you. They don't send you this form and use that form to determine whether or not you're eligible for expulsion from the country. They use this form to figure out who the hell is here so that our programs can effectively manage who the hell is here.
Right.
You know, and that's the reason why the census needs to ask questions that occasionally maybe you're not comfortable with. You cannot answer some questions. My brother, for a couple of years when he was younger, was one of those poor guys that used to have to go knock on your door for the You know, and let me tell you, that's a rough job. I don't envy anyone who does that job. But the fact of the matter is that at the end of the day, as a government, we cannot establish domestic programs. And I don't just mean social programs to benefit the homeless, but I mean things like Pell Grants. I mean things like funding for public schools and roads and stuff like that. These things are all largely influenced by the census. It tells us how many people live in different places and what types of circumstances they live in. It blows my mind that people are so upset about verbiage on the census because they don't want to answer a question that they feel is something that they shouldn't have to tell the government. You don't have to tell the government shit, but the census serves a distinct purpose, and we need to honor that purpose. Otherwise, the programs that we use to try to benefit people, often the very people who are so angry about the census won't work because they won't know how many people are affected by what problems and where they live.
Okay. Do you think that, that people's positions on the census has anything to do with politics or trying to do the right thing?
Oh, it's entirely political. You know, the idea is that, this is the thing. It is fair to say that Donald Trump has taken public positions, although I would argue that a lot of his policies that he's tried to enact that people have been that angry about really didn't end up coming to fruition. A lot of executive orders are still nothing more than just executive orders on paper. Donald Trump hasn't been as effective as Democrats like to pretend he's been, right? The problem on the border wasn't invented by Donald Trump, obviously, as a great example. I do think that this has become politicized. I think that prominent Democrats have become strong proponents of having control over what types of questions the census asks you to protect the rights of, for instance, people who are in the United States illegally. And I think a lot of conservatives on the other side maybe didn't entirely understand what the census's purpose really was and made really bad arguments in its favor. So, yeah, it's entirely political, as are all the problems we're facing right now when it comes to both domestic and foreign policy, is that we're not allowed to discuss the issue at hand. We have to discuss the personalities attached to it. So the Space Force can't be a topic of discussion. It's got to be Trump's Space Force. We can't talk about, you know, trade deficits. We've got to talk about Trump's tariffs. We can't talk about the border issue. We've got to talk about AOC's tweets. This is the way that we engage with politics today, and this is the reason why politics don't fucking work today. Sorry, I'm dropping a lot of swears. I know that you don't mind, but I try not to swear that often on the show.
It doesn't bother me.
But
it's the language of our tribe, so it doesn't bother me. And I, you know, most people. If that bothered you, I don't know that you would listen to Allmaring Radio.
That's fair. That's fair.
Right. I mean, because it does go with it. All right. I've kept you too long. Tell people where they find your work, Alex Hollinger.
Well, today, if you go to Popular Mechanics, you will find my most recent story. It just went up. It is about one of my favorite aircraft of all time, the B-1B Lancer. You can also find me every day on loadoutroom.com. That's where I live. I'm the managing editor over there. You can also find my work on We Are the Mighty, Business Insider, all over the internet. So the easiest way might be social media. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/AlexHollingsWriter. Twitter, it's at AlexHollings52. Or go to AlexHollings.com and you can click on links to get to wherever you want right from there.
There you have it, the one and only Alex Hollings. All right, good luck with your finger.
Hey, thanks a lot, brother. Always happy to be here.
All right, there you have it. Alex Hollings here on a Tuesday edition of Allmaring Radio. How about that? If I tried to have that transcribed as fast as he's spoken for the last hour and 35 minutes, it would cost me a fortune, just so everybody knows. Mac, why don't you get that transcribed? It would cost too much money. That'll do it on a Tuesday. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. If you're just tuning in, talk about the news in the first hour. Alex Hollings was with us. We started out talking about a diaper bag, a tactical diaper bag. That's right. I don't know that I like that idea. Come on. Just go buy a diaper bag. Does it need to be tactical? Are you that guy? Come on. But if you are, get it in black. Don't get it in camouflage or coyote. Okay? That's definitely a bad statement about yourself. And then we begin to beat up political and social issues of the day. So you'll be able to enjoy that. Most of all, relax. It's going to be a short week for everybody. Make sure if you're traveling, you leave early. And make sure if you're watching people handle fireworks. I'm going to talk about that a little bit tomorrow. The number of fireworks deaths around the country and the number of people that get burned around the country. So we'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow. Just as a reminder, you know, you can have a lot of fun with fire, but don't be stupid with it, right? And again, I used to be a junior pyromaniac when I was a kid. So anyway, all right, on a Tuesday, have a great one. All Marine Radio, over and... Oh, tomorrow Lynch and Kenny are going to join me. Maybe the chef. I got to talk to him today. All right. So, 4th of July Food Day, man. Get your 4th on. Have a great one. All Marine Radio. Over and... Out.